Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So we've got several stories this hour about the things that teenagers or younger, quite much younger than teenagers, are being charged with. Things that they have done to family members that they are being accused of crimes because of.
Yeah, and the latest one of these just came to us out of Ocala, Florida yesterday. And it's a story about a 9-year-old who is accused of stabbing his sister, his 5-year-old sister, multiple times. This young boy has now been charged with first-degree murder.
I thought it was attempted murder.
First degree attempted, because she's still alive.
Yes.
First degree attempted murder in the state of Florida, according to WFTV. And they said that, you know, they're still trying to sort out exactly what happened here. But they said that they were called to an apartment complex because this girl had been stabbed several times. And they immediately airlifted her out. She's being treated for her wounds. And they found this 9-year-old boy, her brother, in a shed nearby hiding. And that's really all they've said about, you know, the mechanics of what happened in this case. But man, I did a little kicking around to try to find out, because I know Florida has done this before, trying someone who is younger. I believe the youngest one they ever did was 14. Trying somebody as an adult. And you can still be charged with attempted murder and not be tried as an adult.
Correct.
So I don't know what they're going to do in this case. But here's what Florida law says about that, about prosecution as an adult. This is according to Find Law. Even if you're underage, committing certain criminal offenses can result in prosecution as an adult. This can occur as a waiver when the judge moves the case from juvenile court to adult court, when a crime is excluded from juvenile prosecution is charged, or when a prosecutor has the discretion to file the case in juvenile court or adult court. Some crimes like truancy can only be charged against minors. So it depends on the crime. It does not depend on age.
Right. I'm just looking up a different source that says Florida does not establish a minimum age requirement as a minor. And so they're saying as young as 12 can be entered into the adult court system. Florida leads the country in charging minors as adults, which I did not know and would not have suspected.
I am not surprised.
Something like I would have thought somebody like Texas that takes their crimes pretty seriously.
Yeah, it's also a matter, I think, of the kinds of crimes that are committed,
right,
and the population. Now, Texas, a state like Texas, yes, they've got a big, huge population in Dallas and Houston. But, you know, Florida's no slouch either. There's an awful lot of people who live there. So that's got to be part of the driver.
And so the difference, of course, is you try them in adult court and they can do adult time. And they can also then be in a facility past the age of 18. You're no longer considering that age of consent as the age at which they would automatically get released. You charge a 12-year-old in adult court with attempted murder and you find them guilty, that 18-year-old or whatever that age to no longer be a minor goes out the window.
Right. The only difference is that usually what they'll do is they'll put them in a juvenile facility
until
they're
right.
18. And then they walk out of that juvenile facility right to start, right to prison.
Whereas in juvenile court, they're out of there at 18 or whatever 17, whatever they think the age of consent is.
What they can do, and Florida may be unique in this, but what they can do is if it's a heinous crime, but you still end up in the juvenile court system, is they can there's a special waiver that they can get where they can keep you until you're 21. Normally, you're right. You walk out at 18 and you walk out with a clean record at 18 because anything you did as a juvenile is sealed.
So tell me again what we know about this 9-year-old and attempted murder.
All we know is that, yeah, he's been charged with first degree attempted murder, which means intent.
Right.
That
first degree means intent. You knew what you were doing.
Yeah. And I mean, by virtue of the fact that she was stabbed multiple times, that's probably a pretty easy connection to make.
Right.
That he was trying to kill her.
Yeah.
And they haven't really said much of anything else. I'm sure that the age of both the victim and the defendant in this case has a lot to do with that.
So here's a question I'm going to ask. And we're going to get to a couple other stories out of Utah and Alabama. And if you want to weigh in on this, 576-7798, or you can call 22980. A 9-year-old knows that it is wrong to kill. That's why a 9-year-old is being charged in adult court, because of that intent. A 9-year-old, you can discern that a 9-year-old was trying to kill someone else.
And they haven't said yet whether he's going to be in adult court.
Right. Or even being charged in juvenile court. Yeah. Attempted murder says, you know what you're doing. But does a 9-year-old understand the permanence of death? You know what it means on TV and you know what it means in video games. Does a 9-year-old understand the permanence? You know what I mean? The permanence and reality of what they are doing.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine line. Boy, there's so many distinctions you could make because understanding permanence and understanding the ramifications of permanence. Again, it's a fine distinction, but I think that, I'm trying to remember, how do you put yourself back into your own mind when you were 9 years old?
It's tough.
But I think that, yeah, by that point I got, when you're dead, you don't come back. But what does that mean? You know, how to put that in the greater perspective of one of these days, you know.
And do you account for... I cannot imagine what gets into the mind of a 9-year-old. Do you account for whatever family life might have been going on? If there is an abuse situation, or usually kids that are that young, and yes, I am generalizing a little bit. Usually kids that young are modeling behavior they have seen or have anger coming from somewhere. I personally don't believe a kid is born with that inclination to just go killing people. I think something, either they witnessed violence or are living in some kind of violent environment or an anger environment. I find it hard to believe that a 9-year-old can just snap on their own without some external influences.
Do you think anybody is born broken?
I don't want to think that.
Okay.
I don't want to think that. I don't know, but I don't want to think. I think you are shaped by your environment from the time you are one day old, and that... I just know, I can only go off evidence, right? That generally people that commit violence witnessed violence as a child or grew up in an abusive environment.
And we'll never know. I mean, because everybody witnesses violence in one way or another.
But when it's in your home, I think it's different. I think we tend to model the behavior that we saw as kids, good and bad. You know, I think that's why, you look at like people, there's a strong correlation. Adults that are violent or domestic abusers often witnessed it when they were kids. That's why you look in kids, like the first thing they do is start to abuse animals, because then they go on to do other things. There's often that connection. In answer to your question, I don't think you're born broken. I think you model the behavior that is around you.
Okay. And that's valid. Again,
or take inspiration
never
from it. Maybe
it's that imponderable of, you know, was there a life that Ted Bundy could have lived?
Right. If not,
where he would have been a lawyer and a politician and everything would have been fine, or Jeffrey Dahmer or whoever. And I don't believe that there is.
But don't take that to mean, I think, that you blame the parents then. You know what I mean? Because at some point you have the option to correct that behavior in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just because you grew up in a crappy household or you witnessed whatever doesn't mean you don't have the responsibility, quite frankly, as an adult, to correct that in yourself.
Because there are people who grow up in horribly abusive homes who are fine.
Model citizens. Absolutely. So you're right. Okay, we'll get to your calls, but coming up next, I want to tell you about an Alabama teen who is accused of killing his mom and twin 13-year-old brothers and then went to school. This guy was 16. It's eerily similar cases out of Utah and Alabama, both with 16-year-olds who did the exact same thing. Killed mom and siblings, went to school.
And it's within a day of each other,
It was just a couple of days apart. So we'll talk more about that coming up next. All right, we've got several stories with similar themes here. We're going to talk about these two. They're eerily similar out of Alabama and Utah. But we were talking first about this one. Ocala, Florida, you said this was?
Yes.
With a 9-year-old who has been charged with first-degree attempted murder. Now the consideration is being made whether this kid should be charged in adult court.
And we've got a little bit more information on that and about how Florida handles that sort of thing. The youngest ever charged with first-degree murder was a 12-year-old. And it was a case that goes back to 1999 where a 12 and 13-year-old brother and sister, the brother was the younger one, conspired to kill their father's girlfriend. So it was one of those, you know, you're not with mom anymore, we hate you. And they got a 9mm semi-automatic pistol that was dad's gun and shot her. And they were charged, both of them were charged as adults, she for conspiracy and he for murder. And he ended up doing 16 years. So as a 12-year-old, he was convicted. As a 13-year-old, he was convicted. He did 16 years, so he was 29 when he got out.
Okay. That's young enough to still, you know, get your life together and still have be a productive member of society at that point, especially if your time behind bars was useful.
And he's been out now for 4 years. He got out in 2015, or almost 5 years. Got out in 2015, and so far, nothing else, nothing further heard from him.
Let's get to a quick call, because we were asking you about the mind of a nine-year-old. These kids in these two other cases are 16, so we'll stick on this one here for just a sec.
Platte City, where Remy is calling in. Hello, Remy.
Hey. Yeah, I got a kid. He's a good kid. He's extremely athletic, smart, you know, but he also has a tendency to act out in inappropriate ways sometimes. And when we talk to him about his issues, he is sorry. He does wish he had not done that, but he doesn't realize at the time the consequences that come along with his actions. I don't see how any child of any capacity at this age can understand what the ramifications are that they're going to be enrolled in when they make rash decisions, such as, you know, physically hurting somebody to a major degree where, you know, you either kill them or you put them in a hospital. It's just not possible for their minds to grapple with that type of information.
That's true. I mean, how many times did you hear from your own parents, what were you thinking? You know, didn't you see what was going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so for them to try them, they can charge them with those charges, but to actually put them in court and have them try to understand, regardless of what kind of lawyer they have, what their rights are supposed to be and how they need to be defended, that is not... Their brains aren't ready for that level of interactivity.
But I think what it allows for is, you know, no, you're not going to send them off to maximum security prison, obviously. But if a nine-year-old is trying to kill a sibling, there needs to be some mental health intervention there. And what it allows for is to charge and find them guilty. You then are in a position legally to force them to get help.
And I don't disagree with that at all. I completely agree with that. There is definitely something mental going on that they need help with. But sending them to any kind of jail without any type of assistance is absolutely ridiculous. Because, again, they're not old enough. Their minds aren't mature enough to handle that kind of information.
Well said. Well said. Remy, thanks. Yeah. And that was the other thing. As a dad, you know, when my kids were that age, when they were 7, 8, 9 years old, and I would ask them, why did you do that? And their answer was always the same. I don't know.
Right. Right. But I think you do know at 9 years old the difference between right and wrong.
Definitely.
Some stupid things that kids do, yes. But I think you know that trying to kill a sibling is wrong.
Perspective, sure.
Okay, so the next story comes to us out of Fox61.com. They did a wrap-up of a couple of stories that are eerily similar between Utah and Alabama. Two teens in Utah and Alabama, one teen in each state, allegedly killed their mothers and siblings in separate incidents, leaving their community shocked in what appeared to be unrelated cases. The first question I had was, well, was one a copycat of the other? Mm-hmm. The killings in Utah happened on January 17th. They were the first in nearly two decades for the town of Grantsville, population 11,000. Days later, on January 22nd, the Alabama teen was accused of targeting his family members. So we'll talk first about Alabama. 16-year-old Landon Durham faces a capital murder charge. Death penalty potential, after he allegedly killed his mother and twin 13-year-old brothers before going to school. They were found dead of stab wounds. No gun involved, which I think is interesting also. Stab wounds inside a home in Munford. He is being charged as an adult. Mom was 36. The siblings, Branson and Barron, were both 13. The suspect allegedly killed them sometime Tuesday morning and then went to school. Authorities have not released a motive for those killings. Utah, 16-year-old Colin Jeffrey Haney, also being charged as an adult, skipped school, killed his mother and three siblings on January 17th as each returned home for the day. He is being charged as an adult in the killings along with attempted murder of his father. Four counts of aggravated murder, one count of attempted aggravated mother. Shot his mother and sister multiple times as they arrived home at about 1 o'clock. Consuelo Alejandra Haney had picked up 12-year-old Malin from school, and the suspect opened fire, so this was a gun, when they got into the house. He then shot his 15-year-old sister Alexis multiple times after she came home from school, and later in the afternoon shot his 14-year-old brother, Matthew. Dad gets home at 6:15 to find all of this. And when Dad arrives home, the teen shot him in the leg before Dad overpowered the teen. The neighbor came to the home, called 911, took the father and the suspect to a hospital, and the teens confessed to the murder and was arrested at the hospital. No motive here in any of these. And I don't even know what kind of motive someone could come up with that would make sense.
There isn't one. And we were talking about this before the show. I know a kid personally who did this, who did exactly this thing. And what I can tell you is that when it happened, everybody was shocked. This is many years ago. Everybody was shocked that it happened. But when we found out it happened, mm-hmm. nobody was shocked that he was the one who did it.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was like, oh, yeah, I know who that was. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it was like nobody thought he would go that far, obviously. But everybody thought there's something not right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we found out that somebody had annihilated his entire family and a neighbor and then found out who it was, I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
So what do you do with two 16, you know, again, eerily similar cases? One shoots mom and two siblings. The other shoots mom, several siblings, and then tries to kill dad. I mean, essentially, you're slaughtering your entire family if you can. That's what you're trying to do. What do you do with, let's play that out for a second. In Alabama, this is considered to be, they're charging him with capital murder.
Mm-hmm.
Being charged as an adult, if he is found guilty and they push for it, 16-year-olds being put to death. Arguably, by the time this is, he would be 17 or 18 by the time this goes to trial. Do you put someone who is 16, when they kill three members of their family, do you put that teenager to death for those crimes?
Especially that crime, family annihilator. That's a specific case. We'll talk some more about that.
Two eerily similar cases that we're talking about, one out of Alabama and one out of Utah, both in which 16-year-old boys kill members of their family. In Alabama, he killed his mother and twin brothers who were 13. The guy's 16 years old. In Alabama, it was mom, three siblings, and tried to kill dad. Dad came home, found his family slaughtered. Teenage boy tries to kill dad. Dad overpowers him and dad lives. The case in Alabama, the 16-year-old is being charged with capital murder as an adult, meaning if he's found guilty, he could get the death penalty there. That is not the case in Utah. Let's play it out. If this 16-year-old is found guilty of killing three members of his family, do you put him to death for it? 22980 or 576-7798. Susan's been hanging on the line here for a bit. Let's get Susan's call on.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So in Missouri, they, even at that age, they still, like women, all the women's prisons in Missouri are all maximum security because they only have two. And once you're convicted, you're actually sent to the maximum security women's prison. I unfortunately went to prison, and the first roommate that I had in prison was Alyssa Bustamante, who went to prison when she was 14 or 15 years old for killing the neighbor kid.
I know that name, and I'm trying to remember the case, but yeah, I remember her being national news because she was so young.
And the thing about it is she got into that judicial system at 13, 14 years old, and that's pretty much where her mentality ended. Because sure, she got mental services there, or psychiatric services, but it was once a month by somebody who's seeing 1,000 other people and don't really remember anything about her. So they're basically thrown into the system. You don't look at why an adolescent that really doesn't even have their whole faculty, you know, developed at this time, yet you throw them in somewhere and you don't help figure out why somebody that young did something that cruel and how do we fix this? How do we help this? Instead, we lock them away and we say, okay, you made your mistake for your life. Here's where you're going to sit until you're 60 years old.
Yeah, so they don't do it like they do in Florida where they move them from juvenile to adult prison later on.
No, there's a trailer in the women's prison, and that's where they stay. They don't actually stay with, you know, people over the age of 18, but they eat with them, they interact with them in any of the services that they get. but they stay in a separate trailer until they are 18. But, I mean, how are they, you know, you develop, a large part of your development is your surroundings. So how do you expect somebody to be in that surrounding regardless of what they did? I mean, there are some people that are just bad. But, you know, there's some people that are just a product of their environment. So how do you help that? Instead, like Alyssa, you're going to send her out into the world at 60 years old when she has the mentality of a 14-year-old, and all of her interactions and all of what she thinks is right was learned in a women's prison.
Oh, that's a frightening thought. Well, thank you, Susan. Yeah, I don't know how you fix that. I don't know what you do about a system that does that. But, you know, we mentioned earlier, these two cases don't fit the classic definition of family annihilator, because usually it's dad.
Right. Right.
And in both of these cases, it was the kids, but.
Well, in both cases, it was mom and siblings. In the Utah case, he tried to kill dad,
right,
but dad overpowered him. Mm-hmm. I don't know where dad was in the first one.
Yeah, but I mean, usually with the family annihilators, it's dad who's doing the killing. And one of the most famous cases of that, and this is the thing, you know, you look at a case and you go, okay, this happened. And obviously the fear is somebody who did that at 16 is going to do that again.
Well, the
potential,
yes,
exists for, further violent crime. But one of the most famous cases of family annihilator, there's a guy named John List, and he killed his entire family and disappeared. And he was the first guy that was ever caught by way of America's Most Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It was a famous case. But he disappeared for something like 20 years.
Yeah.
Got married again under a false identity, moved a couple of times, lived a quote-unquote quiet, normal life after killing his entire family. So you just don't know.
I got to tell you, this seems to be... So I Googled this because I remember last fall we talked about a case out of Alabama where a younger teenager was being charged with capital murder for, mm-hmm, killing his family. And I just found it. I couldn't remember exactly. There was a 14-year-old. This was in Elkmont, Alabama. We talked about this last September, who was charged with 5 counts of murder after confessing to killing his entire family. Dad, 38-year-old John, his stepmother, who was 35 years old, his 6-year-old stepbrother, his 5-year-old stepsister, and his 6-month-old stepbrother. And the child victims were siblings. And I have not Googled this in a while to find out if investigators have established a motive. They found the gun. He eventually confessed to it. And they were talking about capital murder for that 14-year-old who literally slaughtered his entire family. And again, this case also was Alabama. So Alabama is not afraid to charge teenagers with capital murder when they commit very, very adult crimes. But should you? And do you execute them?
And as we said, part of the fear is recidivism. You know, you'll do it again.
Right.
But there's also the school of thought that says it's punishment. That's why they call it capital punishment.
Right.
If you did that, you should be punished. So is that the right punishment for a 14-year-old?
Oh, so I said this back in September. And if you've listened to the show for a little bit, you know I am adamantly against the death penalty. Adamantly against it. Because I lived, 30 years of my life in Illinois during a time when DNA evidence and testing that was not available 30 years ago kept exonerating men who were on death row.
13 of them.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. You were also connected to Illinois at the time. And to the point that the Republican governor said, we got to put a moratorium on the death penalty because we're getting this wrong. And so we got to make sure we're not putting people to death who are innocent.
And again, to underscore what you just said, these weren't 13 cases where there was questionable evidence.
Right.
These are 13 guys who did not do it.
Right.
They proved they didn't do it.
And had DNA evidence and testing not improved, they would have been executed for crimes they absolutely did not commit. And at that point, I said, nope, I don't trust the system anymore. At least if they're behind bars, we can still get it right if we need to. But I struggled with this 14-year-old case when I heard about this back last fall, because it's a kid. I mean, 14 years old to me is even different than a 16 or 18-year-old. What on earth, though, drives a 14-year-old to slaughter little kids, too? You know, little kids that he couldn't have been having fights with. You know, that I just cannot get into that head. But how do you execute a kid who was 14 at the time?
And what's the lesson? I mean, if the reason, if you're on the penalty side of things, if you're on the punishment side of things, and you say, okay, you punish somebody like that to send a message to society. If somebody commits, right, a heinous crime, commits a horrible murder, you punish that person severely up to the death penalty. for as a lesson to the rest of society that that's not acceptable behavior. What lesson do you teach society by executing a 14-year-old?
The same thing, I think.
Is it?
I think you, I guess.
Does
I
it,
mean,
does it change?
I see your point. I think you do it for, it's, I don't even know if we do it to be a lesson for society. We do it to be a lesson to you. That this is the series, this is the punishment that we have deemed fits the crime that you have committed. And if there is ever a case in which capital punishment is, you know, in which the death penalty is appropriate, it's for somebody who killed five members of their family.
It's hard to argue.
But
sure.
Do you change the rules when that 14 years old is still a child, but a child who should know better? But this is where I ask again, do you allow some latitude for family circumstance? Do you ask questions about motive and what kind of life this 14-year-old has had? I'm glad I don't have to make these decisions.
Let's go to Kyle in Overland Park, and he'll make it for us. Hello, Kyle.
Hi. I know that this is a sad topic, but this is a topic that I kind of live for. I have a degree in criminal justice, and I did criminology. That's kind of my secondary, and you're right. The real thing behind this is, what school of thought are we coming at this from? Are we coming at this from a point where it's purely retributional, or are we coming at this from, you know, some sort of a, you know, other place? And it's kind of a sticky situation, primarily because if you look back in history, you know, as you said, with the family annihilators and things like that, let's not forget too, Ed Kemper, who went on to kill a bunch of college girls, and his mother, first ended up killing his grandparents, who were custodial, and was in jail, got out, got let go, and then went on this tear.
Yeah, what a frightening individual he was, by the way. I mean,
cold. Horrible human being. But yeah, I mean, let's not. So if we know anything, we know that in general, the recidivism rate for any kind of crime is upwards of 2/3. I mean, it depends on what kind of crime it is, obviously, and it depends a lot on the individual. But even if you look at it and you say, you know, if we just take that average and we say, hey, there's a 66% chance this kid might kill somebody else, is it worth letting them out? And the same thing with a few of the folks that we have here on the Kansas side. I look at, you know, and I think about the Carr brothers, or I think about John Robinson. Those are people who we know we can't rehabilitate. And to be honest with you, there's no reason to allow them to continue on if we're not going to try to rehabilitate them. And so I think that case by case, we have to look at that, and we have to try to decide with these individual kids, of which, you know, I mean, they've made some adult decisions, yes. But we need to look at them, and we need to say, can we evaluate them psychologically, mentally, and determine whether or not we think that there is any kind of hope for trying to rehabilitate them and trying to be able to get them to become productive members of society, or are they quote unquote too far gone? If they are too far gone, then there's no point in, I mean, we don't need license plates that bad. you know what I mean? There are certain things that when you do them, it's kind of unexcusable. And so while I'm not the biggest proponent in the world of the death penalty, I also think that there are some people that we just plain don't need. So,
I get your point, and thanks a lot for the call. I'm struggling with the idea of giving up on a 14-year-old, because that's basically what you're talking about. When you decide it's okay to put... To execute somebody who is 14 at the time of their crime, and some of you have Supreme Court questions that the Supreme Court has ruled on it. I don't have that in front of me. I don't know why you would charge someone with capital murder if you can't actually carry it out. But I'm struggling with the idea of saying a 14-year-old can't be somehow rehabilitated to a certain extent. On the other hand, I go to, how do you ever trust this person out in society again? How do you ever let them out after that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, is the end of the case that I referred to before, the kid that was, if you want to read this, I mean, there's stuff online about him. His name is John Justice, and he was the subject of a documentary on HBO years ago. He was the one that was the lifeguard at my pool when I was a kid, who killed his entire family. And he's been out. He's been out since 1990-something, I think, and again, has not reoffended, hasn't really done much of anything. And, you know, he did time in a prison. He also did time in a mental health facility.
For just a second here, if you have kids in the room, you might want to shuffle them out for a minute because the Miami Herald just posted an update on that Ocala story that we started the hour with about the 9-year-old who is being charged with attempted murder, and they're considering in adult court for trying to kill his 5-year-old daughter. The Miami Herald has posted a very graphic description of what has happened, and I think it's information we're going to pass on to you, but it might be too adult for your kids to hear.
Definitely.
Out of the Miami Herald, again, they just posted this 10 minutes ago. An Ocala mother left her 9-year-old son and her 5-year-old daughter in their home for 10 minutes on Monday. She went on a quick walk to check the mail and to get some candy for the kids. When she left, the two were playing. Police said when she came back, she saw her son stabbing her daughter and saying, "Die, die." The mother hurriedly grabbed the knife from her son as she picked up her daughter and took her to the bathroom. Her son dashed out of the home and hid under a nearby maintenance shed. After police were called, they found the boy shortly after. Officers told them he's had thoughts of killing his sister since Saturday. Again, this happened on Monday. He tried to get it out of his head, but could not, police said. When his mother left, he went to the kitchen and grabbed a knife. Hiding it behind his back, he approached his sister from behind as she was bent over trying to show him something. He grabbed her by the neck and stabbed her several times in the back. When officers asked him again why he stabbed his sister, he said, quote, he wanted to be able to go outside. 5-year-old airlifted to a nearby hospital, treated for multiple stab wounds. Her condition is not known. At some point, we'll have a conversation about if this child dies, if this 5-year-old child dies, what do you do with this 9-year-old?
Yeah, and it's an impossible situation, but I think that the one piece of that story that underscores exactly why we're talking about this is when that 9-year-old told the police, I wanted to go outside.
Because it shows, did he not understand
anything that was involved in any of this?
I got to tell you, John, are you as bugged by I am? I don't know why it bothers me more when it's a stabbing versus a shooting.
Because it's more personal.
It's more personal. It's more up close. It's more, she was showing, you know, you got to do it up close. And in Alabama, it was a stabbing. It was that case where the 16-year-old killed the mother and the two siblings just in the last couple of weeks. That was a stabbing. This was... I know what you're saying.
It's about not killing by remote control.
Right. I know what you're saying about him saying, I wanted to go outside. But when he says, I've been thinking about it since Saturday and I couldn't get out of my head, there is intent there. He waits for mom to leave knowing he can't do it in front of her.
Sneaks up on her.
It's not like he did it at night. You know, mom was sleeping and so he sneaks into his sister's bedroom. He waits until she leaves the house and grabs it. There's something very calculated about that. I know what you're saying about, I wanted to go outside, like he doesn't understand what he's doing. But wow, is that calculated and intentional and thought out like an adult would do?
And can you separate those two things? Can you separate a complete misunderstanding of the way the world works from being able to calculate and see an event happening in your head and then perpetrate the act?
Yeah, and to the texter who just said, and the parent, how horrified she must have been. Yeah, I mean, again,
went out to get the mail and get candy for the kids.
Good job to the Miami Herald for laying that one out, you know, step by step. She has no idea that her son is thinking this. You have no reason to think your 9-year-old can't be with your 5-year-old for 10 minutes.
These kids are playing.
While you go to get the mail and, you know, run to the store next door and grab candy for him. And to come home then and... I don't think that kids are born evil. I don't think, but I don't know what makes a kid snap either. Who knows what he saw on TV at some point. I'm not looking for other places to blame, but I just fundamentally don't want to think that people can't be, that you're born that way and that you can't somehow be reformed somewhere along the way.
If there isn't something, but yeah, boy.
But I can't explain this either.
Yeah, you go through the specifics of that story and that scenario, putting itself into that kid's head and not leaving. There's something there that we just, if you're not, I have to think, if you're not born with that, then you can't put that into perspective. You can't understand how that could happen in somebody's head and become an obsession over the course of 3 days?
Yeah. 72 hours max. He had the thought on Saturday. Thought just occurred to him, and he couldn't get out of his head, so he did it on Monday and waited for mom to leave. That's what's getting me about it is the calculated part of
the
that
planning.
Is, yeah, the planning that went into it. Couldn't get a hold of a gun. Maybe gun occurred to him. No gun in the house, no easy way to get one, but a knife is in the kitchen.
And that again speaks to the personal nature of a crime like that. We always like to leap to the comparison with some of the most heinous killers ever. But when you look down the list of serial killers, very few of them use guns.
Right, right.
Most of them stab because it's personal.
Yeah, okay.
That's a scary thought that at 9 years old that manifested itself in not in torture of animals or the other things that we've thought about, but in actual killing of a human being.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.